Landlords, whether you own one rental property or hundreds, you want to run a profitable business because your future depends on it. Education is the key to opening doors. Your success depends heavily on knowing and complying with dozens of rules while balancing the need of the business for profit. This show lets you listen in on conversations that various landlords have regarding real stories that are posted on our forums. Now come join in on the conversation. And happy landlording.
Good morning and good morning.
Good morning.
Always a pleasure to see you. Well, every industry carries with it secrets that empower you, the investor, to leverage the experience and the pain of others in order to reach your goals faster while sidestepping as much risk as possible. Searching for insider secrets for maximizing your investment is the topic of our first conversation this morning. Cassandra, these three words seem to be the key when it comes to using insider secrets for success and profit. They are ask, receive, and apply. Let's do just that. Who do you ask?
So when landlords are dealing with their rental properties, a lot of times they take a lot of pride in doing it themselves, yes, which is perfectly fine. The problem is you've got to understand that you're not going to know everything. You're not going to know the state and the federal law. You're not going to know the latest plumbing trick. You're not going to know what the inspectors say that's code or not code these days. You're just not going to know it all.
Right.
And there's no way you're ever going to know it all. So you need to get into the habit of asking as many people questions and being very good at asking the interview questions. So that way you can receive the information and be able to make decisions and actually apply it to your property.
There we go. It's a very simple explanation. Is surrounding yourself with experienced investors crucial, let's say, to the amount of profits an investor can accrue?
It's a direct relation.
Is it really?
All the people that I've seen that actually ask a million questions, and sometimes they'll ask me a million questions. So I have to be patient.
I know that person. I'm one of them.
Yes. So I have to be patient to answer all these questions that they ask. But the guys who come in and ask a million questions before they make a decision are the guys that do very well. I'll give a story. There was a gentleman, he's an engineer for a Midtown office here in Anchorage. And right as he was closing on his property, he sat down and did a walkthrough with me and him. And he said, okay, my plan and my strategy is XYZ. Back to the secrets of habits of the profitable investors, right? They sit there and say, here's my goal. Here's where I'm trying to go. And then they started asking questions of things that may get them to that goal. And because I knew their goal, I was able to say, here's the strategy for this property. So it was a fourplex. It was with C tenants and a B-minus property. So it had definite room to upgrade. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we said, okay, you're going to rehab the units one by one and hop from one unit to another unit, living in each unit. In the first unit, you're going to rehab it with these colors, with these floors, with this design, and then you're going to do that same design in all the units. The rents went from $1,100 and now they're sitting at $1,250, $1,300 in a market where rents are going down. His went up. Also, he went from a C-type tenant to a B-minus, B-plus type tenant, and the tenants have stayed there for years now, and they all renew, and every time a tenant leaves, they don't leave it destroyed,
right,
and all these headaches that most landlords have, he doesn't have because he asked, and then he planned it, and then he actually took the information, researched it, figured out who was going to do painting and who was going to do flooring, and figured out his strategy. And then he applied it all, and now he's sitting very well. So he'll be working on buying his next property very soon.
Would an intuitive investor be wise to watch and learn from a troubled investor and that the pain that they are experiencing?
Sometimes you need to surround yourself with those that you aspire to be and those that you don't aspire to be.
That's an interesting concept.
The reason why is because just because you're aspiring to be somebody and you try to copy and mimic them, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And you don't know what not to copy and what to copy and what to mimic and what to ask. So when you're following those that you aspire to be, you only see all the positives. You don't see the negatives. So when you watch the other guys that are making all the mistakes, you learn what not to do. And in my case, I'm around 500 landlords, so it's real easy to see the eyesores and the problems,
right,
real fast. Whereas when you only have four units, for example, you're only going to see a few things. So it behooves everyone to attend the classes and attend the forums because you're going to be able to surround yourself with all kinds of landlords with all kinds of opinions to understand how their values make decisions, how their knowledge base that they have makes decisions that make make it more of a painful process for them when it was a simple answer.
We are talking about insider secrets. I want to extract from you, if I can, your insider secrets on advertising and its relation to time. As it pertains to property vacancy, what should an investor know and take to heart about time, specifically his or hers?
What is very fascinating about time is theft. It's theft of your money, because what's going on is people forget that their time is money. So if you weren't working your rental, you'd be at your job producing an income of whatever your pay is, right? So if you're messing around and dealing with not advertising the maximum dollar of your rental, then what happens is you're doing more showings, you're doing more gas, you're doing more wear and tear in your car, you're doing more phone calls. When you should be focused on work, you're focused on getting your rental going and pushed. So if you would just spend a little extra on the advertising and price it correctly right out the door, then it'll get rented faster and it'll save yourself time, which saves yourself money. And it's just the snowball effect of making a rental productive.
So a smart investor realizes that their time is a valuable asset.
They recognize it. They see it. They put a dollar to it and they strive to it.
Does it help them maximize profits in the long term?
Yes. The landlords that I work with that focus on how much time, not how much money, and how many people they can help, those are the ones that make more money. So they focus on how many people I can help, which means how many tenants I can find, how many investors or vendors I can hire to get this done fast. They focus on getting it done fast. They don't focus on how much it costs. The landlords that focus on how much it costs end up taking way longer to get it on the market, end up taking having to do the job twice because it's cheap work. That's another issue that they have. And then they finally get a tenant, and because the work is poor and it took so long, it priced it wrong and it went on the market wrong, they usually end up with a bad tenant. So if they would just focus on time of themselves, the vendors, and the rent, everything, you will naturally make more profit.
Does the word vacancy make you shudder?
It should. Vacancy is costly for everybody. I don't get paid. You don't get paid.
Right.
Vendors might get paid because that's when they finally get in to do some work sometimes. But vacancy is the number one cost in property management. In fact, it is more expensive than me. Because 1 month of vacancy with all the repairs, with the utilities, with the cost of possibly pipe breaks, with the cost of advertising, it's actually more expensive than my cost for a whole year. And a lot of people misunderstand that.
Yeah. What is the most important question that an investor must ask themselves when combating time theft?
They need to ask themselves, what is their pay and what is it worth? Because if you could do anything for free and you'll run out of time.
Right.
Because you only have 24 hours in a day. I only have 24 hours. You only have 24 hours. So if you don't put a value to your time and say, I'm worth X and I need to leverage other people, ask a million questions, leverage their time, their knowledge, their everything, then you're not going to get ahead. You'll just fall behind.
Is it better to spend a large amount of money for a short period of time than a small amount for a longer period of time when it comes to when it concerns dealing with vacancies?
Yes. So just like a business, when you're in business, you have to spend money in marketing in order to produce leads, in order to produce sales, in order to grow the company.
Yeah.
So in rentals, if you don't spend money to get the leads of finding the tenants, and then if you don't find the tenants, you're not going to be able to get applications, then you won't get a lease, then you won't get money coming in to pay for that rent. So you have to spend a large amount of money to have a pool of applicants to lead through or to feed through to find the best tenant for that particular property. Otherwise, you're not going to find a good match and you'll forever be in a cycle of pain rather than in a cycle of profit. Hi, landlords. I'm Cassandra Taggart with Real Property Management. Landlords know that if you want to be profitable, you'll need a team to manage your rentals. That's why we've developed several different packages to assist with the ongoing demands of rental properties in Anchorage and Wasilla. From maintenance coordination, collections, accounting, communication, marketing, and even evictions, we help with it all. Give Real Property Management a call at 268-4779, mention ad, and receive a special price, 268-4779.
I don't know if a lot of investors or property owners think about this, but when trying to fill a property with qualified renters or rentors, must an investor be thinking of a smart ad campaign to attract the potential customer?
Yes. So it's very fascinating because a lot of people go, oh, it's a three-bed, two-bath, One-car garage, townhome. Yes. Okay, great. That's like 1,000 ads right now sitting on Craigslist and Facebook at the moment. So you have to think of what's the twist and the spin on your property that makes it more advantageous for somebody to want to look at your place versus another. So spend some time on what's the average utilities. Does your utility average beat the guy next door? Mm. So that's why someone will rent yours over another. Does your place have this awesome technology with the thermostats that'll attract the millennials, for example? If you don't use keywords to make it searchable, and if you don't have walkthrough videos, like for instance, we'll do walkthrough YouTube videos of every unit that we market. One, because it does SEO, which makes more links and clicks to the website so I can cross promote any rental. Mm-hmm. But the second reason is there's like 300 views on one listing on the YouTube before they go to apply for a place. So what's happening is we know when someone's about to apply for a rental because they'll click play over and over and over on the YouTube video right before they apply because they're looking through it going, oh, I can't wait to put my couch over here. And when they start dreaming it, that's when they'll apply and start taking the place. So you got to spend some time to answer their questions with videos and the average cost of gas and the location of the schools and the location of Trails. Did you know Trails and Anchorage is like number two reason why people like to live here is Trails?
They like to live close to a trail. So
they love to live. Yeah. So they can bike and walk and all that kind of stuff. And if you're living in a condo, you'd want to be able to walk somewhere.
Absolutely.
To smell the air, right? So that matters.
Will good advertising placed by an investor increase the demand for a rental property and the pool of applicants that you were talking about?
Yes. We're in a different market than when we were in 2014, 2015. Back in 2014, 2015, I'd put an ad out. I wouldn't have to say anything but 3-bed, 2-bath, and I'd get multiple offers with a bidding war. Today, you have to advertise all the beautiful features of a property without breaking any laws and actually compete. National average vacancy is sitting around 7%, 7 to 10%, depending on the cities. We're still sitting at a 5%, which is still healthy, but it's not the 1% we were at a couple years ago. So we kind of got spoiled by the 1% vacancy where we didn't have to compete.
Right.
So now we need to compete a little bit. So you need to build a solid advertising campaign and know where your tenants are shopping and playing to post your ad there.
How effective are for rent signs in windows of properties and on light poles at intersections? Do you find that? How do you view those? Is that just laziness?
I still have landlords who believe to the core of their heart that a sign in a window still rents a property.
Sure.
It does, but it's like 0.1% does it actually rent the property in these days. Most of the tenants are shopping online. And if you want a tenant that knows how to pay online, knows how to do a work order online, knows how to do systems online to make your life easier, mm-hmm. you need to advertise online because that's where they're shopping.
What's your approach in telling someone that they are a, let's say, mediocre applicant after you have tried to vet them, you've looked over everything? Can you take that approach to say, I'm sorry, we can't rent to you?
Yeah. So when you are, before you put a property on the market, you should decide what your criteria is for a property. What credit score are you going to do? What collection background are they going to have? What medical records, schools? If they're behind on their school payment, but everything else is good, are you going to accept that or not? You should have a list of what you will accept or not accept for that property. And then that way, when the application comes through, it's not going to be an emotional decision. It'll just be a process.
Right.
And then you'll say, yep, they qualify in. Nope, they don't qualify out. And you process the adverse action letter, which is their decline or their approval letters. If you don't have that process in place, you're going to accidentally make an emotional decision where you're sitting there going, oh, I got to get it rented. I'm worried about time. Oh, I don't want to go do another showing. I'll just accept this guy. So I'll put him in the property because I got to go to work on Monday and I don't have time to keep doing showings. So you'll make an emotional decision to approve something that's mediocre when you could have done better advertising to get the best.
By taking a direct approach, aren't you as an investor then trying to protect your financial investment in the long term?
Yeah, that's the best thing is you're worried about the money. And what happens is when you're so worried about the money, fear will take over making the emotional decision. But if you are so worried about the money, you should have a process in place. If you don't have a process in place, you're not going to make profitable decisions. You're going to make reactionary decisions, which then are emotional decisions, which then makes you fall apart and not make profit.
You know, 20 years ago, if you wanted to rent a property, you placed an ad in the newspaper. That was probably it, or put that sign in the window or on the telephone pole. There are so many ways to advertise in the new year. What do you find is the most effective in reaching your target consumer?
It depends on the type of property. So, like, for instance, we rank our properties A, B, C, and D. And C and D type tenants will be more on Craigslist, for example, not on the newspaper, the ads. They're more on that channel. The A and B type tenants, they're more on the channel of Facebook Marketplace. They're more on Zillow, Oodle, Hotpads, all these other new syndicated sites. They're even on the Alaska Multiple Listing Service. So you want to be able to hit within those ranges as well. And most of your ads can't do that because you're not licensed in the state of Alaska. So you'll have some restrictions just because you're not a professional, but you do have options to advertise, and you need to advertise electronically now because the digital world is on their cell phone.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's where they're shopping when they're on their lunch break or bathroom breaks or whatever break they're on. That's when they're searching. You also want to have technology in place to where they can schedule an appointment right then and not have to hunt you down while you're at work. Because if you're at work and you have a voicemail that says you can only call me from 9 to 5 to schedule your appointment and my first time to do showings is at 6 o'clock today, and they're sitting there at their lunch break listening to this on their voicemail, they're going to keep shopping to the next person of whoever's most convenient and most easy to book an appointment with to see the property.
Is newspaper old school?
Very old school. It does work on certain properties.
There we go.
But it's not the best advertising for most cases.
As we move into this century, well, we're into the 21st century, you understand the concept of time is money. Does just a small amount of time of vacancy mean the difference between a profitable investment or an unprofitable one?
Big time. So if you do the math of what most properties are purchased for in Alaska with the down payments and the average rents, just the average across the board, if you are vacant more than 1.5 months in a year, you're already at a negative guaranteed. So it takes that fast of a turnaround time, 45 days, to make the difference between profits or not profits that year. And 45 days goes fast.
Yes.
Because you've got your 1 to 2 weeks of turnovers and deciding what you're going to do and who you're going to charge and who's going to be the vendor. Then you got another 1 to 2 weeks to actually get all the work done with all the people, and hopefully they show up on time. And then you got to put it back up on the market, which right now we're at a 5% vacancy, 5-6% vacancy. And so that's, you know, sitting on the market 30 days. So you're looking at 45 days profit gone right away.
For the investor, is it overwhelming to be dealing with all these media platforms, all these social media platforms, to try to place a simple ad about a rental?
Yeah. It just to kind of give perspective of this day and age in the world, it's getting harder to be a do-it-yourself landlord. And it's okay to be your do-it-yourself landlord if you can do all the new channels and keep up with all the newness of this world. So, for example, back in the day, it was an ADN. Now you got to go into all these manual websites and type your ad in and copy all your pictures and load everything. Whereas with us, because we've got systems in place for 500 rentals, I literally click one button and it syndicates within hours to 500 plus websites.
You have got it down.
Because of the process and the systems and the volume that we have. So you just have to decide which one you want and what is valuable to your time. So for example, back in the day when you did the ADN, you'd have to pay to post your ad and compete with the others.
Still do.
Yep. You still have to pay, I think, for some of your ads,
yes,
right?
You do.
And then when you go over to the manual sites, you're spending 2-3 hours of your time manually entering in on each website. And then on Craigslist, you have to hit refresh almost every other day now, and you have to wait for spammers. So every morning you got to check if a spammer got a hold of your account so you don't lose money there. So that's hours out of your time. And if you value yourself at $100 an hour, right, you just wasted $500 of your money.
TCM Restoration is a family owned and operated emergency restoration and cleaning company here in the state of Alaska, and they specialize in water and fire restoration, mold remediation, and a complete rebuild after the fact. TCM has been in business for 25 years and has a team of 50 plus employees, including an emergency on-call crew that responds to all emergencies 24/7. TCM offers free estimates year-round, and they're always willing to help. Just give them a call and see if they can help you in your situation.
Cassandra, what do you know as an investor about people and the way that they respond to money?
It's very interesting how people respond to money, because with us doing over 500 owners, we see all the different values and different beliefs around money.
Yes.
So you get to see those that are very fearful of money. You get to see the people that are very budget conscious and make all decisions based on budget. And they get blinded because they only make decisions based on Dunfis budgets, wait for 3 months. and then you got the people that are very nonchalant and just say approve, approve, approve. And then they realize they didn't actually have the money to approve it. So money is very interesting because you see the core values of people, of how they treat money and how they handle money and how they have a relationship with the money. But basically what it boils down to is most people respond to the fear of the money. They all want it. They are all greedy and want the highest rent and make all the decisions for most rent, most rent, most rent. But they ignore how wasting time costs more money than trying to fight for that $50 increase in rent. And then what happens is then they start making decisions that are reactionary towards, oh, that doesn't fit budget. Oh, I don't have money for this. So they quickly put something on the market half rent ready.
Right.
And when it's half rent ready, it's going to create a snowball of getting a bad tenant and bad applications and bad this and bad that. And it's hard to work with that.
It really is a Molotov cocktail when it comes to money, generational beliefs and emotional hangups.
Yeah. So here's a good example. I pulled some stats, and out of all the evictions we've had, all of them got money tight and fear for money. So they all rejected the inspections. And when they had the eviction come through, they were like, oh my gosh, the place is destroyed. Well, you didn't even check on it. You didn't approve to go look at the place to see how far of damage they're doing, to plan for it and save for it.
How do emotions work for and against us when making decisions about money? You must encounter that with 500 property managers or property renters.
renters. Yes, yes. It's an interesting challenge because you have to break down the emotional aspect of the money before you can actually get them to the point of being able to make a decision. People have the emotional response to money by saying they either super love it or they want it or they're fearful of losing it. Mm-hmm. So when they have one of those emotions, it makes it to where they're blinded to using the process. Like I had a landlord who was so scared of an eviction. So he called us back after he told us to proceed with an eviction. He called us back and canceled us doing the eviction, all because he was scared of evicting someone and making them homeless. And he was more worried about the charity of the money than he was about making profit on his rental. So we had to have the hard conversation of the rental is your retirement account. You need to look out for yourself. And I get being a charity, and there's a time and place for being a charity. And if you want to be a charity, that's fine. But do you have the money to give away to this tenant to just keep living in your place without paying rent? I mean, if you don't, you need to defend your retirement, because that's basically what these rentals are, is these mini IRA accounts that you need to protect. And you're the guy who needs to take care of it.
Is greed an emotion that you encounter? You mentioned that word. And how does it manifest itself in both the tenant and the investor?
Greed is an interesting thing to happen because when it's vacant, everybody goes, well, all of a sudden they put this value in their head that their house is special and their house is this super valuable thing. And they want me to price it for $1 million when it's worth maybe $1,000. And so they get this vision of money and this, oh, I can do all these millions of things and you'll just raise the rent because we added all these values. Or that used to be their home. So everybody would love their pink wall that's in their kid's bedroom, right?
Right.
So everyone will pay more rent because of the pink wall that they spent their weekend on, their hard-earned time, their weekend to make that wall pink. Well, most tenants don't want pink walls, and they're not going to pay more, $50 more a month,
right,
for a pink wall. So what happens is they get either involved in fear of losing the money, or they get greedy and want millions of dollars for something that has nowhere near that value, because their perception of the value of the home just keeps going up in their head. And it's not worth it. So they have to get corrected, usually by us, where we have to have the hard conversation saying, no, the rent is really this number. This is what the market is saying. And actually, if you remove the pink wall, you might actually get this price.
I want to ask you about that. Is it easy for you to spot investor greed in the marketplace when you look at the price of a rental?
Easy. Oh, easy. I can pull up a Craigslist ad and say, okay, 3-bed, 2-bath, 1-car garage. I know all day they'll rent for $1,350, $1,450 all day long, no problem. And then I'm just throwing numbers out. I don't know all the features. But then you'll see this random one in there for $1,600, $1,800. And then it's usually 10 to 20% of that total listing that's completely overpriced. And what's interesting is it's even completely overpriced by property managers. And reason why that's happening is the property managers will just price it to whatever you want just to get your management contract. So you'll come to them and say, I think it's worth $1,600 when it's worth $1,400. And then they'll say, sure, I'll list it for $1,600, sign my management contract. Mm-hmm. I'll just let you sit on the market for however long and waiting till you decide to drop the price to the real price of $1,400. So now you just lost time, you just lost money, and you're no longer a profitable manager or a profitable landlord, all because you got greedy thinking you can hire a different property manager to get higher than market. Yes, a different property manager can help maximize the rent of a property, but there are some in town that'll lie and cheat just to get your management contract when it won't rent for that amount.
Right. You bring up lying and cheating, and I wasn't aware of this, but how common is it for tenants to be preyed upon by scammers using the tenant's own greed as they look for what is called an awesome deal?
I had my heart broken 2 weekends ago when a military guy who just came into town, he did a showing, he saw our ad, did a showing, loved the rental property. Well, the way Google and Facebook and all this stuff works is after you like something, let's say you just bought something on your credit card for a kitchen faucet, you're going to get ads for a kitchen faucet later in the day.
Yes.
Well, this guy, he went through all of our ads, clicked everything, scheduled a showing, saw the property, loved it. He was going to apply that night through our website, but an ad popped up saying, hey, we got a special deal for this rental. Here's the new price. And it was a bogus ad.
Ooh.
He went ahead and sent them the money right away and skipped the application process and then called us the next morning and go, yeah, that was fake, wasn't it? And we said, yeah, that wasn't us.
That just went to an account in Nigeria somewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that is too bad. How would a tenant protect themselves when trying to rent from a qualified property owner?
Well, the best way to do it is when you go to see the property,
yes,
look for the ads. Like, for instance, when we show rental properties, we hand out application cards with our logo, with our website. And on the website and on our website and our logo, you'll see our ad. There's other things is you can get the keys from the person that you're getting the money from. You're going to sit down and have an appointment to sign a lease and get receipts.
Yes.
None of this virtual stuff. That's one of the problems is a lot of people... Even though we're a very digital society now, the problem is you think you can sign a lease, pay the rent, and get a key digitally. And those are one of the ways that actually creates the crime. And looking at the ads, it's funny because on our ads, we actually watermark all of our photos. That's another trick that landlords can do is watermark every photo with your phone number, with your website, so the tenants know that that's where it belongs. And it helps with syndicated websites. Anyways, technology. We're talking technology.
Yes, we are.
And the tenants will start looking at those ads and only applying and calling that number, and they'll match it all up to avoid calling the 1-800 number in Nigeria and paying those guys.
Does your company believe on one-on-ones, face-to-face?
We do.
Human contact?
We do. We're still in a service business, and when you're in a service business, you still need to have that interaction. Yes, there's times where you can do creative things, where you can do things electronically because someone's still out of state, or one couple's here, one couple's somewhere else. That makes sense. But the issue is that if you don't have that one-on-one interaction, you're not able to sit down on the lease because that 1 hour you spend at a lease signing saying, here's what you do, here's how you communicate, here's how you turn it on, give me your cell phone, let me give you my phone number, my emergency line, my email, my website, everything's in your phone right now so you can call me the second something happens. All of those avoid frustrations later, which then makes it to where a tenant will renew, which then makes it to where you have more profit. So systems are in place for a reason to make it more profitable and less painful.
You know, over the last 36 years, I've bought 4 houses. Up until the last year, I've started using DocuSign. What do you think of DocuSign in 2020?
DocuSign works, and we do use DocuSign.
Yeah.
Well, not DocuSign, a different variation,
sure,
version of it, but we do use it, but we do it in person together.
Oh.
So, for example, I'm doing a lease signing with you. I'll send you a DocuSign so you can read the document, but I don't sign it until you sit at the office and we go through it one by one, or we're on a conference call going one by one, because having that conversation on top of signing a legal document avoids a lot of headaches. Yes, it takes time to do that 1 hour and do it right, but it's avoiding all these other headaches and problems. And my tenant's doing this, my neighbor's doing this, and now I have a dog, and now I'm moving in somebody, all these drama stories that start to accrue. It's all avoided when you have that upfront conversation of this is how business will be conducted.
Can the emotion of greed create a destructive cycle of confusion that will probably affect both the investor and the tenant?
Yes. I had a story that came out of the Landlord's Almanac at the last event. And the guy said, yeah, we had three tenants, two left, two moved in. So I decided to start charging more rent. Then we started doing this. Then we started letting the dog in. Then the dog died and moved on, supposedly. I don't know if that's true or not. Then I found out that they were trying to save money, putting trash in the garage and just taking it to the dump rather than having it dumped weekly. So now we got mice. But I went ahead and started charging for that and gave them fines for this. They did all of this activity without a tenant ledger. So nobody knows what the balance is. Nobody knows what they're supposed to pay. Nobody knows if they're late or on time. And it was just this mass confusion. And basically we said, we have to start over. I mean, you can't unravel this. It's too far down the he said, she said with no written documentation.
Right.
And no clear rules or guidelines.
If let's talk continue to talk about greed. If a property is overpriced, will that keep people away from it, which means then that the property is now stigmatized?
Yes. There's two ways to stigmatize a property within the advertising and when you do overpricing. So when you do overpricing, you're going to naturally get rid of all the smart people that would normally apply because they know it's overpriced. The smart tenants that know what they're looking for and know what they can get for the price, because you got to remember, they're looking at property after property after property. They could tell real quick which one's overpriced. So you're going to get rid of the good tenants. The bad tenants are going to come towards you, though, because the bad tenants are like, this is a do-it-yourself landlord that probably doesn't know how to do a full background check. I will overpay, and they probably will never check on my property. They will never know I'm growing a whole bunch of illegal substance in the house. They probably won't know that I've got 5 million kids and then they're destroying a room in the house because I'm overpaying. They're just going to look the other way. So yes, it'll either stagnate on the market and not get any showings, or you'll get all the bad people coming out wanting to overpay, hoping you'll look the other way.
And what would you say to the property investor / owner? How do they stay away from having a stigmatized property on their hands? What should they not do?
They should just – the easiest answer is to ask a property manager what market is for their place.
There we go.
Put it on the market for that price. Don't overprice it or underprice it and price it to get it rented quickly. It's really – that's the answer. Trying to overthink it and get greed and raise it higher on the rent price or make it really low, you're going to get all these other variables that you're not trained on to know how to handle. So then you're walking into other bad problems, and it's just going to be the cycle of snowball effect of problems.
And what do you think you would know this, and I don't think you think this, but what is the insider secret to properly pricing a rental?
In the real estate world, we have what they call CMA, comparative market analysis, where we take a whole bunch of properties that are lined up, similar in features, and then we determine what the price is going to be. Because we're at the large volume that we are, I can do that within my system within a few clicks. Now, as a do-it-yourself landlord, you'll have to do it a little harder way because you don't have 500 rentals to look at to determine what the price is. So now you're going to have to go to Craigslist or Facebook, pull them all up. Okay, I want to see every 3-bed, 2-bath, and understand that what they're advertising on Craigslist and Facebook is what they're asking for. It's not what it's actually rented for.
Never thought about that.
So then you want to drop the price from that number and then throw it up on the market. If you get a certain number of calls within a week, you know you've got it. If you get a certain number of showings within 2 weeks or a week, you know that you've got the right price. And when you get a certain number of applications within that time period, you know you got the math right. If you're missing phone calls, showings, or applications, you're overpriced or wrong price.
Hello, Alaska. I'm Bad Brad, and this is Jetta. As a team, we're Bad Brad's Bed Bug Busters. If you think you have bed bugs, Jetta's trained nose will be able to detect their presence to give you the peace of mind of being bug-free or the knowledge of exactly where they're located. Bad Brad's uses proven safe and effective heat treatment to bust bed bugs. It will not harm humans or pets, unlike chemical treatments used by the other guys. I will save you money pinpointing the exact location and limiting the treatment accordingly. This will also reduce the inconvenience of treating your entire residence. Jetta and I keep up with the latest research, technology, and training as the only Alaska member of the International Bed Bug Research Authority.
I call Jetta and Brad at 242-2915. for, and check out their website at badbradsbedbugbusters.com.
Let us do what we do best, kill bedbugs. We're good to you, bad to the bug.
Cassandra, let's talk about what you know concerning numbers. You once made the statement that profitable investors understand that their money is made when they acquire a property, not afterwards. How is that possible?
So you can't start producing revenue until you own the property. And a lot of people start doing their math based on, okay, if I buy it and I hold it and I do this, and then when it finally sells, here's my revenue, here's my income.
That's what I just did.
Yeah. The problem with that is that it's not real money till you sell, and you can't put a value on it till you sell. So you need to basically make all your decision based on when you finally own it, because you can't hem-haw and never buy anything, because then you're never producing. But when you finally own it, it's just like when a tenant is moved into a property. Your risk mitigation starts when a tenant moves in. So you need to start making sure you build your record keeping and your files to avoid problems from escalating.
You have all the real answers, let me tell you. Can a poor buying decision right at the start possibly cripple a real estate investment?
It can. I'm very disheartened when I hear another person, for example, a military member, because they can do VA loans.
Right.
And VA loans are a powerful tool, and it's an amazing tool because it's zero down and you can get into a rental property and then turn around and use the FHA financing to get in for like 3% down. So you can get two properties with zero down. Here's the problem, though, and you got to be ready for it. 100% financed property means no cash flow. That means you got to be prepared to handle the lawn bill, the snow bill, the trash bill, and do some labor potentially yourself, unless you have a really good paying job to pay for the negative of the property for a while, because it's going to take several years before it's profitable. And you can accidentally do yourself under if you don't buy correctly. That fits your strategy and your plan and your overall portfolio.
What does it take to purchase a property properly?
I'm going to go back to the basics where you ask and review and apply what you know, because you need to ask a million questions. If you've never been a landlord before, you need to ask a million questions from property managers, from real estate agents who have rental properties, not just a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. And you need to ask a lot of questions and you need to read a lot of forums. And like I said, if you stop reading, you stop growing. So if you don't understand the concepts of what being a landlord is, if you don't understand the processes in place, if you don't understand what it takes to do a purchase on a rental property, like asking questions about prorated rents during the process of closing on a property, you can accidentally lose money. And then right when you close, you're done. You're going to be in a financial hardship for many years.
And speaking of hardship, have you seen this? Can a property that was purchased without qualified research take on a life of its own and then become that dreaded money pit?
It can be. I got a landlord that it was a person who was in the medical field. They bought a fourplex. They also bought a fourplex that was in what I would call a D classification. This particular landlord is one of those people that keep their house pristine and clean, and I mean to the nine condition. And so she should have bought something that was more like a B or an A property, because she can handle a tenant accidentally, you know, scratching the wall. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, she gets nothing but hard evictions. So she couldn't stomach it anymore. Next thing you know, she had a fourplex that was 100% empty, but pristine. Because she couldn't make a decision on screening a tenant. She couldn't make a decision on turning it over, and she couldn't handle somebody destroying that unit. So she just left it vacant in pristine condition. And that makes you lose profit. It doesn't make you any money if it's sitting there vacant.
Let me ask you this. With your experience, can you see investors that pay too much for a property from the very beginning?
It happens more so now than it used to.
Really?
Because we have this conversion between what rent prices are versus what the sales prices of houses are. We're now in a time where you need to learn the association between rent prices and the value of the property, and try to negotiate repairs and try to negotiate what type of property you're going to buy to get into the cash flow environment, because cash flow is very rare unless you have a large down payment to achieve right now. but you can overpay. And if you overpay, it's going to be years of hardship of trying to keep that mortgage paid every month and hope the hot water tank doesn't go out. Because that's another $1,000 or
absolutely.
A roof or whatever. And any one incident can put you under. And that's scary.
You know, real estate and speculation seem to go hand in hand. Is speculation something that is learned over the long term with experience of every transaction? Or is it just something that you acquire?
So it's
a gift, if you will.
Yeah. Being a landlord or a property manager, it's like science. You know, you mix all these things together. And one of those things that you mix to make this product is experience. And when I have 20 years under my belt, I'm sitting here going, oh, yeah, this is exactly what they're going to say. In fact, on the forum last week, one of the landlords was asking Eric a question. And Eric goes, I bet you I'm going to call it. And he said exactly what the tenant's going to do next. And the landlord wrote back on the forum, Eric, you called it. It's exactly what the tenant did next. So it's a bit of experience. So if you don't have the experience, there's a lot of hardship you may naturally experience because mm-hmm. you didn't ask enough questions, you didn't research enough, and you only have so much time in a day to do all that.
Absolutely.
So sometimes it makes sense to use a property manager until you develop that knowledge.
And as an investor, how do you anticipate the future and the market?
I watch trends of the past. I don't watch the future in the sense of I'm optimistic and I'm going to buy hoping that prices will go up and hoping this will happen. You never buy on the future. You buy on the past. So you look at the past rents. You look at the past trends. You look at the past neighborhood. Who's moving? Who's buying? Who's making the neighborhood better or worse? When you look at the trends, you look at long history trends as well as just a few months trends. So that way you can understand the direction and make a strategy to the property.
And what do you say to the investor who is in it for the short term versus the long term? Which is the best?
You don't make money in this world in short term. You could, I guess, if you're doing flipping, but flipping's very risky. I know a couple people who've done several flips and one deal did bad, so bad it knocked them out for years. So this is a long term play. It's not a rich, quick, overnight type thing. And a lot of people go to these forums and exciting classes, pay $197 and come learn how to do this by tomorrow. And they actually teach things that are even illegal in the state.
I did not know that.
And it's disappointing because people buy in on the $197 and I'm going to teach you all these rich, fancy things where my class is free. And unfortunately, it does hardcore reality. So it discourages some people. But maybe you should be discouraged because you have to have a thick skin and tough stomach to get through this.
Sandra, how can investors find out more about joining the Landlords Club? Where do they go?
The website's the best place to start, www.thelandlordsalmanac.com.
And it's on Facebook too, isn't it?
Yes, we got Facebook, we've got the website, we've got podcasts, we've got books, we've got forms and documents to help you out.
You are fully connected. What kind of resources does being a member of this club provide?
Many. Connections to the actual real links to the state laws, connection to the actual forms and notices that you have to post on tenants' doors when something's going on. You're connecting with expert landlords that are in the group, and they'll chime in with their opinions, whether you like it or not.
And do you make yourself available to mentor new investors?
All the time. So the forum is where you'll see me. I don't take too many phone calls. If I did, I'd never have enough time.
Right.
So on the forum, I'll dedicate so many hours on a forum per week, and I'll chime in, answer questions, or I'll make sure that the questions and answers that were posed in the forum are accurate to keep you safe.
Well, Cassandra, we want to thank you for your knowledge, of course, your passion, and your guidance over this last hour. You are, as I'm sure our listeners now know, an invaluable resource and experienced advisor for those who are investing in real estate and taking their first steps